And welcome to MotoPod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 523 for Wednesday, the 1st of March, 2017. I'm Skyler Vickery, here in California, and I'm joined by none other than recently crowned superstar and voice of World Superbike, Harry Lloyd.
Hey there, everybody. So for anybody who didn't know, I'm now doing some superbike work. So if you have BN Sport in the US or Fox Sport in Australia or the World Superbike Video Pass, then be sure to tune in and join Steve English and I for some fantastic World Superbike action. Obviously, we will be talking a lot about Phillip Island this show, both the MotoGP test, which, you know, due to me flying to Australia, unfortunately we didn't really have time to do a show before I left, so that's why we sort of missed MotoGP testing, but we will do a bit of that, and then obviously talk about the first big race of the season, World Superbike and World Supersport from Phillip Island. Obviously, Stock 1000 and the new Supersport 300 class. Those guys only race in Europe, so just three races this weekend, and then of course also the Australian Championship was there. But this show's already long enough, and we don't need to talk about that as well. But thank you everybody for bearing with us after our little unscheduled break. I think it's about 20 days since we last did a show, so that's pretty long for us. You know, we've had a good run there of knocking out a show every week, so a big thank you to you all. Of course, this week we have to be thankful for a couple of things. We have to say a big thank you to Dave Neal for heading to the motorcycle show in London, the MCN show, and getting us a couple of interviews there. I believe he's chatted to Troy Corsa, obviously former double World Superbike champion, multiple race winner, still current Super Pole record holder Troy Corsa. And Dave also chatted to James Rispoli, young up-and-coming American racing in BSB, and a few more. So be sure to enjoy Dave's chats just after we talk about the news and MotoGP testing, and then just before we go into the World Superbike action to break up Skyler and my flow of no doubt shit spewing.
We wouldn't be able to do a lot of that shit spewing without the generous donations, and we have a few new subscribers this week, Dennis Cote and Steven Schmidt. Thank you very much for your new subscriptions, and of course to our reoccurring subscriptions of Nick Saban, Martin Gurney, Paul Corman, Brian Elliott, Marty Parker, James DePere. Ooh, I should have read that ahead of time.
Yeah, that one's always a tricky one.
Yes. Darren Marshall, Chris Court, John Michael Allen, and James Dewitt. Thank you very much for your donations. If you would like to donate, you can go to the website motopodcast at motopodcast.com.
Yep.
Yes, I got that correct.
Yep, no, that is correct. And then down the left-hand side of the page, there's all the PayPal information you'll need. Also, a big shout-out to Sam Moore, who sent us a very generous one-off donation. It is hugely appreciated. You know, as we always say, it does help us do things like send Dave down to the motorcycle show in London, like send Phil Hall to the PI Classic, and then like send Martin to the Qatar MotoGP test. He's currently trying to get a few interviews lined up for that, so be sure to watch out for that one. And then no doubt we'll get you as well to a couple of different things this year, Skylar. So it is set to be an absolutely fantastic year of racing and also hopefully of MotoPod coverage. Of course, if you are enjoying the MotoPod coverage and would like to share your thoughts on the MotoPod coverage, share your thoughts on the racing action, or just share your thoughts about anything at all, really. I mean, if you send us an email, we'll probably respond. You know, if you're asking for life advice, maybe it won't get read out on the show, but happy to help. We're probably not the best people to ask for life advice or, you know, anything too serious. We do mostly know, or at least pretend to know, about motorcycles, but motopod@motopodcast.com, that email address goes to all the hosts. So as I said, you'll probably get an answer from someone, no matter what your question is. But yeah, motorcycle ones are sort of preferred.
Yes, and I finally caught where my error was. I said I was almost reading into the email address. You just have to head to motopodcast.com for the subscription. But anyways, that's what happens when you take this much time off. You get a little rusty, but moving on. But as Harry was saying, when you write into us, sometimes your emails would get read on the show. And we had an email this week from Andy Pilbeam. Andy writes in, "Hi guys. I know the World Superbike races were the usual finishers, but really good racing. Glad to have it back. Was impressed with Alec Lowe's managed to keep his head and ride two very sensible races. But a big shout out has to go to Liam Camier. Always keep an eye out for him as he's a local lad. To get two finishes with a lack of track time on the bike, and you're never sure. Oh wait, I'm sorry. You're never sure is going to finish was awesome. That sentence kind of got me messed up there for a second. Anyway, also the Supersport race was fantastic as well. What a finish, and again, well done, Kyle Ride. Could have been taken out twice. Didn't get the red miss, which I'm sure I would have, and brought the bike home well. Can't wait for the next set of races and for MotoGP to finally start. And he also asked, what's the MCN Fantasy League details? Can't seem to find it anywhere. Keep up the good work. Love the show. Now, we have started the MCN Fantasy League, and it's the same login and password as last year, which is Motopod. And I know I have signed up for it. Harry, have you signed up for the league yet?
Yes, I have signed up for it. I'm yet again the administrator of the league. So yeah, Motopod, capital M, capital P, and then the exact same thing for the password on the MCN website. That'll be included in the show notes from now until the end of the season. Once again, the system from MCN is a little bit janky. So I had to redo my team about 8 times. And also, there's no accept all button for me as the league administrator. So if you're wondering why it's taking a little long for me to accept you into the league, it's because for every single person, I have to click accept, and then am I sure I want to accept this person? So it's, you know, it's at least 2 clicks and 2 page loads for everybody. And that it just takes so long. Like I will get to you. I promise I will get to you. I'm sorry if it's taking a long time, but I will get to you. It's just that without an accept all button, it does take forever. So if anybody from MCN or the company that runs it for MCN, if any of you are listening, just add an accept all button. Like it's a motorcycle racing fantasy league. I'm not trying to steal anybody's credit card details. I don't need to click twice to accept people. Just let it be. But anyway,
you can also do is speeding up your servers a little bit too. It does take quite a bit to load your pages. But anyways, hey, Andy, thank you for writing in. I pretty much agree with all your takes on the World Superbike race. We're going to cover that a lot later in the show, so we're going to get to that. And then, but right now, I think we're probably should just jump to the news so we can get that out of the way, because there's a lot to talk about when it comes to the races this week. So why don't you go ahead and lead us off there, Harry?
Yep. So as anybody who watched the World Superbike and specifically World Supersport coverage will know, Kenan Sofoglu, the reigning champion of the Supersport class, has been forced to miss the first 2 rounds of the 2017 World Supersport season. He had sustained a thumb injury in the off-season while supermoto training, you know, went down, put his hand down as humans naturally do, and just landed on his thumb. It wasn't even that fast a crash, so that caused the thumb to break. And then he had some metal work put into his thumb, but then the metal work was pushing against his skin, and he had to go race in Phillip Island, so he took it out. And then basically, once he took the metal work out, the thumb was no longer in the socket. And he did 2 days of testing, and he was like 6th fastest, I think, so he was pretty quick. But he said that it was just unsafe for him and for everybody else, which is fair enough. So yeah, so Foglu will miss Phillip Island, or has missed Phillip Island, and will miss the Thailand round. So he'll be coming back into the championship with a pretty big disadvantage. He did win the championship last year with 2 DNFs. And then obviously, as we'll get to in a little bit, in terms of the race results, Kenan Sofoglu was probably pretty pleased with how the World Supersport race panned out, with his 2 biggest rivals not exactly doing as well as anybody really expected. So yeah, we'll have to see.
Yeah. Mugen has confirmed John McGuinness and Guy Martin for the 2017 Isle of Man TT races campaign. That would be on the electric bike effort, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
And I'm not surprised with the McGuinness. A little bit surprised for Martin, because this is for someone that's said they were done with racing, sure has decided to make quite the comeback this year.
Yeah, no, Guy Martin definitely seems to be taking it seriously. Obviously, Mugen are a branch of Honda, so that's probably why he's doing that. And I think, in all honesty, this is going to be Guy Martin's best chance of winning a TT. Of course, the electric TT, is it considered a proper TT race? Depends who you ask. It's going to be tricky for Guy Martin, because, you know, right now Guy Martin obviously holds the somewhat dubious honor of being the most successful rider to never win a TT. Yeah, if he then does go and win the electric TT, then he sort of just becomes not another TT rider, because obviously he's a race winner, but, you know, it's going to be a strange one. But yeah, excited to see how Guy Martin goes in that race. You know, the electric TT is always pretty interesting. It's obviously not quite as long, but you know, you always get some cool bikes, and there's certainly a fair bit of innovation going on there.
Right, and that it's always getting faster and faster every year. So the skill level comes up. You've gone from guys that were what we maybe you consider a mid-pack rider for the rest of the TT to now they're pulling down all the big names to be electric bikes. And that's good for that part of it. And I got to tell you, you may not be considered a TT winner, but you still got to have balls to ride that electric bike that fast around that track. So if he won it, I would still consider him a TT champ.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, you know, if anybody can win a race around the Isle of Man, no matter what bike they're on, then it's pretty impressive. I'll let you take this next one, as it is about your home country.
Yeah, sure. So America Honda are actually coming back to Moto America, and they're going to be teaming with the Genuine Broyster Chicken team. That is the team, Denny Walker's team, that was formerly the Red Bull team a couple years ago in the Supersport. And they had the Yamaha R1 last year, and they're going to be competing with rider Jake Gagne in Moto America Superbike, which is good. So they're going to come back not only to Moto America, but they're coming back to Superbike with a really good team. It's going to be a strong effort, and I'm actually lined up to grab an interview with Jake here shortly. So that's going to be awesome to hear from him and to be able to hear, you know, how the new bike is going, and hopefully the Honda here in America can step up, because as we've seen in other series, it's not been the strongest bike, but with America Honda coming back with their support, it should be a strong package. So definitely looking forward to that.
Yep, should be good. The Australian Superbike Championship will now feature live on free-to-air television in Australia via SBS. The Australian Superbike Champion, they were racing down at Phillip Island this weekend. And the racing was actually pretty good. All of the races were fairly close. You know, it's not quite the same caliber of factory bikes as you'd seen World Superbikes or maybe even Moto America and BSB. But it's in pretty solid racing. So, you know, if you don't have anything to do, then it definitely could be worth a watch. And it will also be available on demand as well. And then it will be aired in Australia with a slightly delayed telecast on Fox Sport Australia. So if you're in Australia and want to follow the Australian Superbike Championship, then go for it. Of course, there is Brian Starring now coming back into that series, former MotoGP rider. And then we also have Josh Waters on the brand new Suzuki. He's racing there, obviously former BSB racer. And I think Josh Waters has been on the show a couple of times as well. So, if you're interested in that, as I said, check out SBS or Fox Sport Australia.
Yeah, I know. I'm not sure if there's any coverage available in the United States outside of some shadier means, but I got to tell you, I don't even know if I have time to add on another racing series at this point. As much as I would want to watch, I'd probably watch about the first two races, then realize like I just don't have time to keep track of this many. I tried that once, and even when I wasn't doing this show, it's almost nearly impossible. speaking of racing series that I have a hard time keeping track of, the FIM. What does the EWC stand for, Harry?
Endurance, European World Championship? Endurance World Championship.
You know, I put the news in and then I don't even go back and go through my notes. Anyway, so the Endurance World Championship is now going to be viewable in the United States and Canada, and it's a broadcast agreement with the TV channel Velocity. So you will, if you do have Velocity, you will be able to catch those. I'm not sure the scheduling, if it's going to be live or if they're going to do a delay or if they're going to do a highlight show, because it is endurance and sometimes you don't have 8 hours or 10 hours, 24 hours to watch an entire race. So they may give you an hour and a half recap. But regardless, you will be able to catch some of that. So look forward to that. If you don't have Velocity, you may want to find a way to get hold of that, because, you know, what's life without more motorcycle racing on TV, Harry?
Not worth living is what life is without even more motorcycle racing on TV. And speaking of motorcycle racing, Moto America has announced that Suzuki and X-Star, Suzuki's newly launched oil and chemical brand, will sponsor round two of the 2017 Moto America series for the Suzuki X-Star Championship at Road Atlanta, April 28th to 30th. In addition, Suzuki is offering... is returning as an official manufacturer to the series for a third consecutive season. We saw, I believe it was Tony Elias and maybe Roger Hayden as well, but definitely Tony Elias. He was out in Sepang just before the MotoGP test alongside Sylvain Guintoli testing that superbike. So interesting to see how that goes. Of course, as I said, Josh Waters raced in the Australian Superbike Championship this weekend in Phillip Island on that new Suzuki. I thought the Suzuki would come out of the box and blow everybody away just based on some of the numbers that were floating around about the power and that sort of thing. But still some development work to do, certainly for Josh Waters. So hopefully Ginters and then the Moto America guys can use their testing time a little better to get up to speed and hopefully bring Suzuki to the front. Of course, the Suzuki was hyper competitive last year in Moto America, still with Elias and Roger Hayden.
Yeah, and what's scary for the rest of the field, this is Elias' second year. Now he knows the tracks, and he's going to be quite fast. He's confident. And I don't know if hanging out with Raj is a good thing. I saw a picture on Instagram the other day where him and Raj had managed to flip over a golf cart. No injuries, but that's something you really don't want to be doing when it's teammates. I'm pretty sure Factory Suzuki had a look at that shot and be like, guys, that's both of our riders. Can we not flip golf carts, please? Roger, let's know. Let's get him out of there. Speaking of escaping with slight injuries or none at all, Marc Marquez suffered a briefly dislocated right shoulder during a short and private Repsol Honda MotoGP test at Jerez this week. Now, briefly dislocated, I'm guessing means it popped out and he popped it back in himself, or it wasn't a very high degree in a shoulder dislocation. But
yeah, I think so. I think the big issue with Marc Marquez's shoulder is that, you know, you'll remember that I think it was in Austria that he also dislocated his shoulder, and it was that same shoulder. So it seems like his right shoulder does have a tendency to become easily dislocated, which, you know, is obviously an issue. If your shoulder doesn't stay in its socket, that's slightly less than ideal.
I've got a bit of the problem with shoulders is once you pop them out, they get the paperclip effect. So the more, you know, you bend it, the weaker it gets. And I've got that with mine. Like, mine got wrecked so bad that now when I turn it to the side, it actually partially dislocates. So when I turn it back, it kind of partially pops back in. Oh. So he's gonna have fun with that later on in life. But once you pop it out once, it's easier to do it. Every time you do it, it makes it worse and worse and worse. So
yeah. So I think I was reading somewhere, maybe it was Moto Matters or something like that, that was saying that, you know, the sort of surgery to fix an issue like that is, you know, even for a MotoGP rider is going to be a 3-month recovery. So it's probably not a surgery that Marc Marquez is going to have for a little while unless the problem becomes really, really serious. So that's just sort of something that we'll have to keep an eye on, because, you know, obviously Marc Marquez, he's very, very fast, but, you know, he still does have a crash or two. And if that problem gets any worse, then it could be quite bad for him, obviously. So, you know, hopefully he does stay all okay with that shoulder. But definitely something to just, you know, keep an eye on throughout the season and see if he does dislocate his shoulders anymore.
Yeah, I know. Hopefully he keeps up with that, because surgery, you just don't want that on those.
No.
That ends the news for us this week. I'm sure there might have been a few things we might have missed. Like we said, it has been quite some time since we've been on the show. That's why a few of those things might have seemed a bit dated, a la Safaglu and things like that. But whatever, we got it out, we got it on the way. And now we're going to get on to something else that might feel a little dated, and that's the MotoGP Phillip Island test.
Yeah, we're just a little bit late on this one.
Yeah, we might be closer to the Qatar test than we were the Phillip Island test at this point, but no worries. We're here just to kind of go through the combined times on Friday and point out a few things before we get to the World Superbike test. And surprise to no one that Marat Vinales, yet again, has set the fastest time over the weekend. Actually, I think he led every single day, if I'm not mistaken.
More or less, I think, yeah.
Yeah, and that he's looking, you know, scarier and scarier as time goes. He's already, well, actually they said, what is it, out of 9 testing days, he's led 7 of them. And it's like, all right, well.
I think so. Something about that's definitely right. He's definitely had the fastest time overall at all 3 official tests. And then he was also apparently quicker than Rossi at their private Sepang test with Yamaha at the end of November. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think we should be surprised anymore that Maverick Vinales is quick. I think he's going to come into this season and be a championship contender from the off, in all honesty. You know, both he and Marquez were the only two riders to do 128s. Both of them did pretty good race runs. Marc Marquez's race run was pretty comparable to Maverick Vinales. So it looks like Marquez is, you know, sort of able to ride. I don't know if he's riding around the problems, because, you know, we saw in Sepang that Honda were struggling a bit. Seems like at Phillip Island, they're not struggling so much. Obviously, Phillip Island, a bit of a different circuit for bikes, which can sometimes hide or you know, accentuate problems. So it looks like at Phillip Island, certainly with Marquez second and Pedrosa third on the combined times, both within half a second of Vinales, that the Honda's maybe not in as much crisis as we initially thought. So I'd expect Marquez and his weak shoulder to be up there with Vinales from the start.
Yeah, and Carroll was in the top five as well. He finished fifth with the Honda, so it may not be doing bad. But I did read somewhere that, you know, like you said, Phillip Island can mask a lot of things because it's such a fast-flowing track, and where the Honda has been struggling the most is getting the grunt off the corners and being able to maintain that with the electronics and the current engine, which was something that they were hoping to gain from this week's test. But, yeah, things are there. They may have a little struggle, but it may be one of those things where the Yamaha's really good at one track and the Honda's great at another, and that could make the battle even better. Bit of a surprise, though. In fourth place is Jonas Folger.
Yeah, now, huge surprise there.
Yeah, so once again, I can go back and say how many times when I heard he got signed to that Tech 3 contract last year, right there before the Mon race, I was like, wait, they meant Johan, not Jonas, right? They're talking about Zarco. I'm like, no, Jonas Folger. I was like, oh, all right. And, Herb Partro, he's going to come out looking like a genius if this kid keeps putting in results like this.
Yeah, no. For me, I think that, yeah, the most impressive time, all things considered from the test, obviously, Maverick Vinales, incredible pace from him, but, Jonas Folger to be there in fourth, the fastest Yamaha, is a huge, huge thing. Also pretty impressive from fellow rookie Alex Rins in sixth place. Great time from him. And then, Andrea Dovizioso in seventh, the leading Ducati. I think that, this season could be pretty good just based on all of those times. Everything's just looking so close at the top. Pretty unpredictable. As we said yet again, obviously Phillip Island is, a bit weird. And because it's testing, you do have guys like Valentino Rossi maybe not worrying about a lap time. Maybe Yamaha are getting him to test some things that Yamaha think could work and stuff like that. So as we always say, pinch of salt with the testing times. But if your name is Jonas Folger or Alex Rins, you're certainly going to want Mum to print this out and put it on the fridge.
Yeah, no, it's good. It gives them a lot of confidence, but it does show the main thing that they're improving, and that's, just more racers to the top, more variety. As we saw last year, it could be even more winners this year. Who knows? Down in eighth was Jorge Lorenzo, and this kind of goes back to what you were just talking about, how, they're testing different things, figuring out. And, Lorenzo was pretty good at the Sepang test. He was right there, but, he was struggling quite a bit to figure out the bike here, and he said he was kind of going around in circles, so... he's probably going to find this year a lot of times he's going to gel with the bike real well. Some tracks and some tracks he's not going to gel that well with. But, early days for him and that team, and someone with his capabilities no doubt will be getting it going and getting along. And speaking of improvements, in ninth place was Jack Miller. And that's good for his confidence and good for the season going to him. We had talked about that he needs to have a good year, and he's off to making a good start and making inroads to that. Mm-hmm. And then behind him is Aleix Espargaró on the factory pill. Aleix has just got this history of making bad bikes good, and he looks like he's on his way to do that again now, doesn't it?
Yeah, certainly. The Aprilia is making pretty steady progress. It's not quite the same as the Suzuki, obviously. Aprilia have a tiny race department. Like, I think it's literally six people who work in the Aprilia MotoGP race department. So they're forging ahead. And I think it was also at this test that Aprilia and Suzuki both debuted their new sort of a winglet solution. Both of those sort of going for the same sort of thing as Yamaha with the internal winglets. You can find photos of those all around the internet. I'm sure that by now most people have seen them. We also learned the day before that we were recording this that the aerodynamics ban is only for the outside of the winglets. It's only for the outside of the fairing, sorry. So... you know how Yamaha have those sort of like two internal winglets?
Mm-hmm.
They can change those throughout the season as many times as they want, as long as the outside shape of the fairing doesn't change. So they could have, those two winglets. They could have one with five. They could have one with six. Whatever they want to do, as long as it's inside the fairing, they can keep tweaking it. So, teams, as ever, have found a loophole in the rules. So the idea of... banning the winglets to reduce costs, that hasn't happened. I don't know. For me, it just seems like the winglet ban was a bit unneeded, maybe. Like, I don't know.
It seemed a bit premature, didn't it? They always talk about every year, it's like, we're going to bring costs down by changing everything. Okay. That's worked so far. How'd those 800s work out for bringing costs down?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I don't know. Still some work to do for that one. But yeah, Aleix Espargaró really, really strong in 10th. I don't think he's going to be fighting for the podium this upcoming season, but I think he will be mixing it with those satellite guys, which will be great for him to see. Alvaro Bautista continues to impress a fair bit in 11th on that Ducati. Obviously the third fastest Ducati behind the two factory bikes. So not too bad for Bautista ahead of both the Pramac bikes. Both those Pramac bikes are newer than the one he's on, so that's pretty much exactly what Bautista wants to be doing. Valentino Rossi in 12th, as we said, 0.921 off his teammate. But I have a feeling that Valentino Rossi, maybe not as much doom and gloom as everybody thinks about Rossi. I think that both Yamaha and Rossi were probably just, trying out some different settings. This is what testing is for. It's not just about a fast lap time. So I don't think that Rossi will be, extremely worried. I think that Rossi already knows that this season is going to be incredibly tough with Maverick Viñales and Marc Marquez now both on very competitive bikes. So yeah, interesting to see what he does. Andrea Iannone in 13th, a bit lower than I thought he would be. I thought that Iannone would certainly be ahead of Rins, but again, Philippines a bit strange, and it's only testing. Iannone had an interview with, I believe it was motorsport.com, where he seemed pretty confident about his chances this year. So I think we'll see Iannone just as crazy as ever. Whether the Suzuki can, support his crazy riding style, we'll have to see. But I plan on still keeping an eye out for Iannone, because I think
Yeah,
he's going to continue to be one of the most exciting guys out on track.
he had also mentioned that he never threw the soft tire on to go after Ultimate Lap. He's working very hard on race setup, which is actually probably pretty good because he, Crazy Joe can send it for a lap. That's not a problem. That's never been an issue for him. So if he's getting his race set up and he's still fairly quick and being within a second of anyone that's setting times on soft tires, he'll be definitely good to go when it comes time for race day.
Exactly. I don't think too many of these guys inside that top 13 are pretty worried. As we said, it was under a second splitting all of the guys in the top 13, and when both Vinales and Marquez are on lap record pace for the one lap, I don't think there's going to be a huge worry. If you take Marquez and Vinales out of that time in comparison with the top 13 from Danny Pedrosa to Andrea Iannone, there was only about half a second in it. So still pretty close despite being, that far down.
Right. Following up, was Daniel Petrucci, and he's on the Dovizioso 17. Being back there 14th, it doesn't look as bad, just like you said, because he's only 0.4 off of Dovizioso, who was on the fastest, and he's only 0.3 off Lorenzo on the Ducati factory effort. So not looking too bad for him. And 15th was Johann Zarco. Yeah, he's a little bit back behind his teammates, but once again, rookie season, good at some tracks, maybe here, there. It'll be something to see. But not sitting. Not too worried. 15 still pretty good considering how deep this field is going to be this year. He was followed by Hector Barbera on the Desmond E GP16. Still not the last Ducati, so that's always a good way to look into your head that yeah, I'm still doing all right. So
Yep.
right
Yeah,
there, but.
exactly. So yeah, but behind Barbera is Pol Espargaró. Pol Espargaró 17th on the Red Bull, and again, within a second of Danny Pedrosa. Once again, just taking out Marc Marquez and Maverick Viñales. So Pol is slowly getting that KTM to work better. KTM, are working pretty hard to bring a huge number of updates to every test. Still a lot of work to do for them, but I think that they're probably all pretty happy with how it's going. Loris Baz was 18th, 1.4 seconds off Viñales' best time. Then just behind Loris Baz was Bradley Smith, also on the KTM. Smith, maybe taking a bit longer to adapt to the orange machine, the RC16, than his teammate Pol Espargaró. But Smith seems to just, be steadily putting in the work. Obviously, Smith's second half of the season was pretty much ruined by that knee injury he sustained while doing an endurance world championship race. And yeah, just trying to slowly rebuild from that one and rebuild his confidence. And yeah, just putting in the miles on that KTM, which is, what you need to do with it with a brand new bike.
Right, and he's still really close to his team, Matt. And he's still, like you said, recovering from that knee injury. He's not even done recovering from that. He's got a long road for that still, but he's he'll be there. And finishing behind him was Scott Redding, our favorite concern of MotoGP and recent testing that people are probably sick of hearing us talk about. But he had another disappointing test. And I guess I would say at least Mize, but I was just reading an article before we got on the show, and he was talking about how hard of a time he had it, and he was losing confidence in the front end of the bike, and how the bike felt stiff, but he was running soft settings, and the tire was all over the place. When the wind came up, he wasn't comfortable. The team asked him to go out and do a race simulation. He said he wasn't comfortable with that because it would just be a waste of time because he's not comfortable on the bike, and it just made no sense. And he's still trying to just go overall pace and. Scott needs a good guitar, let's just say that.
Yeah, especially because Scott Redding is a rider who thrives on confidence. A confident Scott Redding is a hugely fast Scott Redding. You saw in Moto2 when he fought Pol Espargaró for the championship that he was really confident every weekend. And yeah, as you say, he really needs a good guitar test and a good guitar race. Otherwise, I don't know what Scott Redding does. In all honesty, it's still very, very early days. Obviously, don't want to be saying that, but just these initial signs where Scott Redding's a tenth and a half faster than Carol Abraham, and what's that? And 4 tenths off the pace of his teammate on the fourth best Ducati on the grid. It's
Yeah.
no bueno.
No, and the one thing that is different from the other writers that we've talked about that are maybe back here is that, like I was saying, you see some of these other names, there's constant improvement. Alex Rins finished his first test back in like 20th or 18th, and now he finished this test in 6th. You see where he's learning, whereas Scott seems to be lost. He hasn't made much improvements. They've been trying, and it's not like Scott's not one to put in the effort. I mean, there's every day on Instagram he's showing whatever workout he's doing, or outside when he's not trying to pimp the Monkey Fresh or whatever the fuck that is that I see just about every 10 minutes come up on my feed. Regardless, but yeah, he's been putting in the work. So I don't know. I don't know if it's, and this is his because he had a lot of problems before because he kept changing out his crew chiefs, and this is the first year he's had a consistent crew chief as well. So hey, man, the I hate to say it, sound like a dick, but the excuses are starting to run out the window, buddy. It's time to put on the helmet and go fast. So I'm hoping in Qatar he gets that going.
Mr. Vicroy throwing down the gauntlet there to Scott Redding. Just behind Scott Redding was Carol Abraham as he makes his return to MotoGP. And then Sam Lowes rounds out the time sheets, 1.6 seconds off Vinales' best time. Lowes continuing to learn that Aprilia machine, and he had two pretty nasty crashes during the test. So still trying to find the limit there for Sam Lowes, obviously brother to Alex Lowes, who was at Phillip Island not only to help his brother with some line spotting and things like that, but also to then race in the World Superbike Championship, which we'll be getting onto soon. I don't really have anything that much more to say about MotoGP testing. As we said, it was a little while ago, so all the fans of MotoPod out there have probably already covered it, and I think I've said everything I want to, but Skylar, if you have any more gauntlets to throw down with Scott Redding, then please do go ahead.
I don't have a problem with that guy either, just to make sure anyone knows that I don't clear it up. I actually really like Scott. He's a really good guy. But yeah, I was kind of disappointed. You were running the smoothest transition there. I thought you were just going to run with it, and then you ended up throwing it back to me. And I was like, oh, Alex Lowes, and then the World Series. I was like, oh, nice. But.
No. If you don't have anything to say, then we'll jump to some interviews with Dave in London. As we said, Troy Corser and James Rispoli, and then a couple more surprises as well from our own Dave Neal, escaping his northern solitude to head into the big smoke and chat to everybody at Motorcycle Live. Apologies that I couldn't make it. I was originally meant to go, but then obviously a couple of things changed. So here is Dave. With probably Troy Corser to start, but maybe James Rispoli. I don't know. I haven't edited them yet. So here are some interviews.
Zoom, zoom.
This is Dave Neal from MotoPod, a very noisy and crowded XL Arena with the MCN Bike Show. I'm delighted to say joining me for the third time on MotoPod, we have American rider and Quattroplan FS3 rider Scott Bowsen for this season, James Rispoli. James, welcome back to MotoPod.
Thank you very much. Yeah, like you said, we're back in England. We're here at the London XL Show, and we just unveiled the new color scheme for Quattroplan FS3. So,
which it looks fantastic. We'll post a picture onto the website later on. But the bike looks grand.
Oh, it's amazing. They did an amazing job being able to tie in a little bit of green with the classic FS3 orange and black.
Sure.
I think the whole color scheme between the leathers, the helmets, and everything is just going to look trick this year. So I'm just excited to get things rolling.
Last season was British Superbike after stepping up from British Supersport. didn't potentially go, I think it's fair to say, it didn't quite go as the way that you would have liked last season. How was it from your point of view?
I mean, it was the same as the way it looked from the outside. It was a struggle, but we can't really focus on that. We've got to move forward, and we've been given a great opportunity for the next 2 years with FS3 and Kawasaki to be a Team Green rider and to represent the brand Kawasaki. So for me, it's about getting back to the podiums and winning like we were in Super Sport, and to just be back on the front, be back at the front, and just doing what we usually do, and then move back into Superbike later this year with a couple wild cards, and then next year full time. So
it's going to be a tough class this year. Looking at some of the guys that are coming in, you got Danny Buchan stepping back. I don't like to say stepping down, because that class is something is going to be a little bit special this year with the Stock 1000 class. It's going to be a tough ask.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's really stepping down this year, because I think, like I said before in another interview, it's a sideways step for us.
I agree completely.
The manufacturers want to see 1000s. They're selling the stock bikes, and Super Stock 1000 is now turned into a more premier class, if not in line with Super Sport. We've got more races. Some races we've got 3 races, some we've got 2. We've got a long race, we've got short races. It's going to be intense with Cooper, Buchan, a few of the other guys coming down and or sideways. It's going to be back to where we know Super Stock can be. And it's going to be an intense class, and we hope to just kind of put a show on and to bring back the championship for Kawasaki.
How's the winter training gone? You've been back at home in the States. You've been out in Texas with James Ellison and the family, and doing your couch surfing and the Manny impression with Young Rider. How's the winter been for you?
It's been great so far. Been a lot of traveling. Like you said, I've been over in Texas the last week with boot camp. I've been in California with JP43 training, doing a lot with Kawasaki there because we've got a great connection. So just trying to stay riding as much as possible. Training-wise, we're just after last year, we had a few crashes, so we took a little bit off, and it was a little bit hard to get, motivated to just train hard again. But we kept it fit, and I feel really, really strong and athletic this year, and I feel more bike fit and ready than ever.
Which is a good thing. So a lot of bike training through the winter, through the off season. What's the testing program looking like going into the new season?
Yeah, so pretty much I fly back on Tuesday from here and go ride 4 days in California on a ZX10, not RR, just a regular R, and then I fly straight back to here and then go to Spain for the Cartagena protest with everybody, and then we've got a test lined up. Obviously we've got the BSB test, and then I think we have one more lined up before round
one. So you got one in between the 22nd and potentially the first round?
I think it's a TBA, but I think they were trying to do something in England, weather depending. We don't want to go ride in the wet yet, so.
Sure thing. So going forward from this season, nice to have a 2-year deal. That must make you a little bit more relaxed going forward. As we say, taking a sideways step to the Stock 1000, but then with a sort of half an eye on BSB for 2018.
Yeah, and this is all really just about regaining the confidence and regaining, the composure that we had leaving Keith Flint's team. That was a big project in itself, to be able to get to the front of British Supersport when that was hot.
Yeah.
With Stapleford breaking every track record and, being at the forefront of that series, we had a lot of momentum, and it showed right at round one for last year in BSB. A little bit of a stumble, but to be able to regain the composure and regain all the confidence this year, and then to move into BSB for 2018, we just need that process, even though it's another year on tacked on the tally. But, at the end of the day, we're here to win a championship. That's what we need to do. And, all things aside, I think it's a very doable thing.
Just something I want to ask you from the mental perspective in a second or two. But this year, there's a big change with the Super Stock rules. As you say, it's been brought as a more premier class. Super Sport may be taking a little bit of a step back. Obviously, there's only really the Yamahas that are coming to the forefront as a new model. 250-mile races in a weekend, does that change your approach to fitness at all?
Not after last year, because last year the races were long and really, really intense. Last year, it took me a little bit to understand how to get through the races and conserve tires.
Yeah.
They don't really teach you that anywhere along the way. And Super Sport is tough, but you always had enough tire on the soft. And in BSB, the pace was so hot that I was destroying tires trying to hold the pace.
You're trying to hold up.
Yeah, and to be able to do the learning curve and to understand that took a long time to figure out. So I think that being said, I think we'll be okay. We've got the rock hard too that we've got to run. Sure. So I think it's going to be, you know, easy. You know, I don't think the tire life is going to be an issue anywhere we go. I just think it's going to be who can manage the pace and who's going to make the less mistakes is really going to be it's going to be the big thing, because all three top guys that are in it are Buchan and Cooper, the guys I'm looking at.
Yeah.
Obviously, we've got, you know, Farmer is good and Hutchie, you know, can't discredit those guys.
The top 10 is solid.
You know, but they've come from BSB, so they understand the long races. So those are the guys that are really going to be the big ones in the beginning.
It's the new young lads that have got the red mist.
Yeah.
You got the likes of Mason Law potentially coming through, waiting for that to be announced. Jordan Weaving, Joe Francis. But there's a lot of young talent coming through as well. They're going to be chasing your heels as well.
Definitely, and we need to expect for them to come later in the season. I don't expect it to be right out the gate. You know, thousands of different beasts, and you know. If they do, we'll deal with it when they come. But the talent's there. It's just a matter of understanding the motorcycle and whatnot. So for me, it's about the big three. And once we get our head wrapped around them, we hopefully, by the later of the year, when the young talent kind of comes through and understands, we'll have the points advantage and we can manage those races.
Just from a racer's perspective, one thing that the watching public don't tend to take into account, when this is your job, this is your life, we watch it from the TV, watching the guys in the pastime, it's our hobby. This is what we love watching. And you guys, it's a completely different angle. Going from Keith Lynn's team the year before last to stepping into the Anvil Tag Yamaha team last year and not quite having the results that you were hoping for, how does that affect your mental approach to a race weekend and positivity? Because you guys are brimming with positivity, but also it can be a solo sport while you're out there.
Yeah, it's you got to have a good group around you, you know. It's really got to have a big foundation, you know, to fall back on. You know, I don't care who, any top sportsman anywhere, the people at the top have got a foundation. They've got a circle that they rely on every single day, and that's crucial. What people don't realize is that last year, even though it wasn't to go the best year, we were on lap record pace.
Yeah.
From the year before. Every single track I went to, I was on lap record pace about, apart from three, I was 0.2, between 0.2 and 0.3 off the boys in blue all year. Unfortunately, it was 18th place most of the time, but they don't realize that lap record pace is lap record pace. As a rookie, not having any testing, that's fast.
Yeah.
I'm not discrediting myself. I'm actually looking at it as a positive.
I did seeing the difference in the timesheet and looking that little bit deeper to come forward from that.
You know, and for this year, it's just about the hunger. You know, I've won championships before. I understand how to do them. This is something for me. I've got a great team with a ton of positivity and all about the mental side on how to just keep the riders happy and making sure everything's there. The organization is massively key, and they've got it down pat. So for me, this isn't an ideal scenario. This is the way it went with Keith and all that. It was the way, you know, we were able to do well. You know, the boys sort it, they make sure everything's there, and it takes one less thing I need to process. So for me, this is a great stepping stone, and to, you know, I look at it like, don't quote me on this, I don't know who's an American if they've won a BSB championship yet. I don't know if anybody has. So for me to be able to do and be maybe the first American to win a British championship is the real ideal goal.
To win the actual BSB championship, we had one miss out by 6,000
John Hopkins,
second,
yeah. I didn't know if anybody did it before, and but, you know, to start here and to maybe, you know, do it next year would be massive for my career. Even though it's British Superstock, it's a British championship. And
doesn't Taylor McKenzie any harm, has it?
Exactly, you know, and you know, he had a year like I had last year, came back determined and made it happen, and then now he's back up. For me, I've already got that second year.
Yeah.
So for me, it's just, you know, it's not do or die, but I've got the grit between my teeth. I've got a few people in the background that I need to prove wrong, and you know, and make it happen. So I'm not worried about it. I just want to continue and do enjoy the process, enjoy my life, and enjoy racing a motorcycle.
And this, we'll look forward to seeing you through the season. Good luck in Stockhausen with the Quattro Plant FS3 team. We'll catch up sometime mid-season, see how you're getting on, and bring you back to the Motorpod listeners once again.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you, guys, and thank you for all the fans and the listeners out there. This is a great podcast, and we'll try to be on more often.
Superb. James Rispoli, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks, boss.
Well, hopefully you heard some of that. It was a little bit noisy with the slideshow going on in the background with the Australia versus England challenge. It's a little bit of flat track racing out in the main centre of the show down here at XL. You've got the likes of Chris Walker and John McGuinness, Neil Hodgson all wandering about, and it's looking good. But hopefully that wasn't too noisy in the background for the listeners. But James Rispoli there for the Quattro Plant FS3 Kawasaki team. Looking forward to taking things forward into British Super Stock 1000 this year, again, as you said, against the likes of Ian Hutchinson and Richard Cooper, the big three, if you like, along with Danny Buchan, and hopefully a returning Josh Elliott as well if he gets his ride sorted out. So hopefully we can bring you a few more interviews across the course of the day, and not too noisy in the background. We'll try and get hold of who we can, and we'll come back in a bit. Well, as I said, we'll have a wander around the show, and just finishing on the slide circuit in the centre of the outfit, we have double World Superbike champion, former AMA Superbike champion, Troy Corsa, joining us on the show. Troy, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, no worries.
Still in your leathers and still dripping with sweat. How was it out there?
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, it's first time for me doing this sort of flat tracky sort of stuff. Although I'd done a bit of it as a kid, I guess, when I was like 10, 12 years old. But now it's nice just out there skidding around. It's a lot of fun.
Looks hard work.
It is, because you're just non-stop, and the track's quite slick, and your foot's quite slick with the steel shoe, so you're working the whole time. You can't just relax. As you see, we're laying the bike down a lot, so it's quite physical, and round, so no rest. So us road builders are used to a bit of a straight, to have a bit of a rest on that. But
you got some keen competition out there as well with Hodgson and Walker and everybody else.
Yeah, you know, those guys have been here for a few years, and so we just need a bit more track time. But no, it's all good, mate.
It'll come over time, won't it?
Yeah, no.
What have you been doing with yourself these days? How's retirement treating you?
Since I stopped racing, I've effectively been like a race school instructor, BMW ambassador.
Yep.
Sort of continuing doing the same stuff still for this year, but not quite as much.
Okay.
But yeah, so same thing, just still on the bike, having fun, and trying to help people to learn how to ride.
You looked into rider management or rider help at any point?
Yeah, I'm giving young Billy McConnell a bit of a hand. Yeah. Last year we done a bit, but it was his first year on the bike.
Yeah.
So we sort of just let him find his feet. But this year I'd like to spend a bit of time with him and the team, and try to get him up to speed, because he's got a lot of talent.
Very much so.
He just needs a little bit of direction, I think, a little bit with the bike. So yeah, that's about it, really.
A good benefit for him having you in the corner as well. It gives him a little bit of a boost.
Well, because they're quite a newish team, they've actually got not a lot of experience at the track. So hopefully I can just help even the organisation of bike preparation and that sort of stuff. So, but no, nothing's changed now since I've left there. So I think I can still step in there and give someone a hand.
You never, old dog never loses its tricks, does it?
No, definitely not.
And plans for this year going forward?
At the moment, like I said, we're just taking each event as it comes. I've got Goodwoods again with BMW this year, so that's about it.
You can find somebody waiting for your attention in there, so I'll have to let you go.
I'm just here to drag me
off. Troy Goss, thanks for your time. Enjoy the weekend.
Man. Cheers.
So as it was a very, very brief chat with a very sweaty Troy Corsa, still in his gloves and leathers after doing the slide competition. Would have been nice to get a bit more time with him, but at least it was a little bit quieter, and hopefully you guys could hear what was going on a little bit more than with James Rispoli. I look forward to hearing the James Rispoli interview. Hopefully Harry can weave his magic on that and try and break down a little bit of the background noise, but it is quite noisy here on the, in the centre of the arena with these little CR50s buzzing around, little CRF50s even, little Hondas. And the noise of the music and the razzmatazz that goes with it. So we'll keep wandering around and see who else we can catch up with. We'll catch you in a bit. As I say, wandering around the show, they're doing a good job down here at the XL, but at the MCN show. What I am delighted to do is I've made my way over to the Norton stand, and I'm absolutely chuffed to bits that the boss of Norton, CEO of Norton, Stuart Garner, is happily joining us on the show this week. Stuart, thank you for joining us on the show.
It's all right, Dave. It's quite nice to see you.
And you. Hopefully people can hear us over the noise of the show that's just going to be a slideshow that's been the bane of my life this morning, trying to get people heard over them. There's nowhere really to hide. What a fantastic stand you've got, taking centre stage on the stand, the TT bikes and the brand itself, not tucked away out at the back. It's something you basically at the forefront by the doors as people come in.
Yeah.
Congratulations on the brand.
Yeah, no, thank you. We've had another big year, building on where we've been over the last few years, and the new V4 has helped slightly reposition the brand, going really following on that TT project that's been running now 4 or 5 years. We've finally got the TT bike where we were happy that we started to show from an engineering perspective what we felt we were capable of doing 131 miles an hour with Devo last year, albeit an Aprilia engine, but there's a reason why we went down that route. And 5 years ago now, unbelievably, we made the decision we wanted to make about a litre V4 sports bike, and then we spent a lot of time on the brand side of Norton, to whether that should be an inline, whether it should be a V, a twin, a triple, etc., etc. Obviously, reasons it can't be a triple.
No.
Few reasons it couldn't be a big twin, kind of very Ducati. Inline we felt was very Japanese.
Very much so.
And we tried to say what would that engineer of the 1950s and 60s, Norton, what would that engineer, what would his engine kind of be today, given the choice and the branding of everybody else's kind of engine options? And we felt strongly that the Norton boy of today would have been a V4 engine.
And as
that works, we felt that worked well for the brand. We then took that to the engineering department to say kind of where would you be? And they were somewhere between an inline and a V.
Yeah.
And as we then went out and put some engineering into an inline or a V, because we'd always get what we felt was the best engineering product, kind of before the marketing department kind of took a decision, the engineers came back to say we would prefer a V4. So that kind suited the brand and suited the engineers. So at that time we made the decision that that's what we would do. Then faced with a reasonably large bag of money, but a bigger bag of money required to do a chassis and engine project in one at the same time, we decided that it would be more cost effective and to mitigate the risk of complete motorcycle development, we will do the chassis, electronic, suspension, brakes first, and do the engine second, after we'd perfected geometry and a chassis. So we then went off to the TT, made our own chassis, and stuck an Aprilia V4 in. And we did that because it wasn't Japanese, and it wasn't a Triumph. And we felt that it was as least contentious as we could put somebody else's engine in a bike to give us an engine that would be pretty bomb-proof and wouldn't break down, while we buggered about and got a chassis made and then tested the rest of the bike. But if we're off to the TT to do that, and it's a 40-mile lap, the last thing we wanted was an engine that was going to break down.
Absolutely.
While I'm trying to get rider feedback on a chassis.
And trying to develop it and make it grow at the same
time. Exactly.
Organically.
Yeah, exactly.
For the circuit.
So I felt we're a little bit misunderstood at that point, and people gave us a bit of a knock, say, oh, how could you do that? It was only a short-term thing to help us develop a chassis.
Yeah.
And as you see now, we've developed that chassis to 131 mile an hour lap. We've now put all of the focus on the engine, and you now see the result of that, where we've got the new V4 SS and RR with our own chassis, our own electronics, and lo and behold, our own engine. But the size of our business and the task to get competitive against Honda, BMW and those world superbikes, but the task to take them on is it's monumental, and it's incredibly difficult to do that, and we have to sit down and give a lot of thought to how we do it technically, financially, and to mitigate the risk of the technology
technicals and the finances to make sure we don't go bust. Because Norton's been bust enough times, we don't need to do that again.
Exactly right.
And so we sat down and said, well, this is the common sense way to develop a bike as fast as we possibly can to be competitive at the Isle of Man and therefore be competitive on a track or on the road in that litre category. And as soon as, you know, we've got the bike to where we feel is competitive, the focus goes from chassis to engine, and that's what you've seen in the last year. And this year, TT17 will be the last year of an Aprilia CRT, and TT18 will see us race the Norton V4. So kind of we're just migrating now from away from that Aprilia V4 to our own engine platform, which will, you know, in the next few months we're away, and that'll be there.
So in the early days you had Cam Donald working on the engine and working on the chassis, along with Steve Plater as
Yeah, absolutely.
Cam has an awful lot of experience around the Isle of Man. That must have been invaluable towards building to the SG6 that we're up to now.
Yes, it's and agreed, you know, and Dave O moved the job on again last year.
That was an incredible lap.
Yeah.
Anybody that to get close, let alone succeeding over 130 miles an hour, especially against the might of the Japanese, and where Norton as a brand and a company where you brought it from, must have been an incredible feeling.
Well, you've just got to have kind of balls like coconuts, because you not only to do the speed and the lap time, but of course nobody's ever done it on that bike. Mm. So Dave's taking the bike to a place where it's never been taken before at the TT.
Yeah.
And it's pretty scary to take a bike to a place that's not been taken on the short circuit, let alone to take it to test it to the edge of its limitation.
You've got gravel at the traps TT. Done into the place that is not so bad, but taking it to the nth degree at the TT, I don't think there's, I mean, obviously Cam's had the experience, he can give you the feedback on whether the geometry, the frame, yes, things work, how it turns. But for balls out and leave your brain at the grandstand.
Yeah,
Dave,
totally.
Dave O's your man.
No, he got on it and just got on with the job and wrung its neck. And, you know, immediately after the TT, we're chatting to him about this year. And just, you know, the guy's done the business and immediately said, well, we want you again. Let's kind of, you know, just as a, not only because he got such a good result, but the way he set about it, and he committed to Norton, just almost out of respect. You're like, you're in, let's go again. You've bloody earned a renewal.
Damn right.
A pay rise.
Oh, even so, you know,
and I'm as tight as a coat of paint, so kind of, you know, but it was fair to look after the lad because he'd done an ace job for us. And you know, on the back of Dave O doing that kind of time and showing that the bike had that capability, we're able then to sign somebody like Josh with his kind of talent. And it's quite interesting how you can't sign that talent until the bike's good enough.
No, that's right.
But I can't get that speed out of the bike without the talent.
And it
was awkward on day one to try and get the talent as good as the bike, or the bike as good as the talent. And I think we're over that now, but the first two or three years with Mackers and Hego, it was difficult to get the bike as good as them, or them to say, well, how much faster can the bike go? Because did Mackers have a 130 mile an hour lap in him? Or did the bike have 130 mile a lap in it?
This is where I was going to go with it. Mackers, his best lap that he can do for his level, which is still beyond most people's comprehension, if his lap is 125 but the bike is 130, how do you find that? But then how do you sell that to someone like Dave O?
Absolutely, where it's an unknown. And I think in terms of quantum leaps, Mackers has probably done the biggest amount of development on that bike. He's with us for a couple of years and saw us from, you know, a bike that wasn't capable of much to becoming a bike that was firmly in the mid-high 120s, and stuck with us and knew it was a project and kind of, you know, properly committed to it. So I think he, as a rider, he's probably, you know, got us further than anybody else. Cam did a great job and Dave O has kind of moved it another level in performance terms. But Mackers kind of took chunks out of development for us and showed us the way with that.
It is the donkey work that we're in.
No, absolutely. Yeah.
To this level.
But I think now we're getting in a nice position where, you know, it's top 10. We've done more improvements in the last few months, specifically with new aero and new chassis. And the bike now, like for like, with the same CRT, is actually going faster now than it was last year, last TT. So straight line speed, we're faster now with the new aero. So
fantastic.
We've got high hopes for this year's TT as the bike continues to develop. But it's the TT, yeah. So you know, we need a little bit of lady luck. We need a, we need a smile from her, and yeah, we'll see what we get. But we're heading in the right direction. And last year's result then pretty well was the kind of drop flag and turn this into a road bike and get it to market.
Would that be something that was that sort of hooked Josh Brooks in? Because Josh returning to the TT this year after his exploits on the Milwaukee Yamaha, Josh doesn't take things lightly. He's very methodical and thinks about what he does. So how did that deal come about to bring Josh Brooks back to the TT with Norton?
Yeah, very observant. I can't say too much, but yeah.
Come on, Stuart, come on.
Well, look, we've not taken any decisions in the future, but Josh is a world-class short circuit lad. He's done two TTs and shown us that he's world-class bike racing.
His pedigree transfers.
Makes him fast.
Yeah.
And he's probably, we were chatting about this the other day, he's probably, well, he is the fastest man in the world to go road racing currently.
Yeah.
That doesn't make him the fastest road racer.
No.
But it makes him the best kind of world class short circuit lad that's gone to roads.
He's a BSB champion and a world superbike rider, world supersport level.
Absolutely.
Appreciate Peter Hickman's out there doing it and Pete's done Macau and on the roads.
Yeah.
But it hasn't quite transferred on the short circuit for Pete.
So
for Josh, it's a different pedigree.
That brought a second dynamic to Josh beyond road racing. So for sure he'll do a fabulous job with that kind of vision and that tunnel focus and that concentration intensity that kind of only Josh puts into things, which we love. I mean, that's fantastic, because I'm fucking like that in Norton, and so a lot of the Norton team. So there's none of us kind of kick our heels. We'll crack on in life. So we feel we've got somebody that's just going to dovetail into the team along with Davo and ourselves fabulously. So that's the road racing side. But back on short circuit ground, a guy with that world class pedigree, that's not missed on us. So we'll probably go and kind of have a trundle around a few of the short circuits this year with Josh, and just further develop that V4 SS and the V4 RR and see where that journey takes us. And you know, and everybody will chatter now, I'm not going to go in BSB. No, we're not. I'm not saying that we're not. I'm not saying that we are. I'm saying we've signed Josh to go road racing. But we've just brought out a sports bike. So it would be natural for anybody to say, well, let's go and have a run around a short circuit and see what we've got.
You don't do anything without a long-term plan, Stuart.
No.
You can see the look on his face now. It's like, don't take that question any further. So going forward then with the brand, we've got Josh Brooks on the bike, we've got Dave Johnson coming in, a few little maybe excursions possibly to the short circuit. What leads me on to the question, what do the next 2, 3, 4 years hold for the Norton brand on the racing side?
Yeah, well, yeah, I personally want to win a senior TT. We're not going to settle and rest until we've done that. So that's 100% the focus, and it's a big ask, and we don't take that lightly, and we don't expect to walk into one. And if it's next year, the year after, or 5 years, we'll continue to invest in the engineering and the performance of the bike until we win it. And then when we've won it, I want another one.
Yeah.
And the drive and the determination at Norton, and it sounds silly now, but if I can put a couple of bikes into a couple of privateer teams, and I get 4, 5, 6 Nortons in the senior, and that's not, that sounds mad when I've got one bike, but Honda do it, Kawasaki do it, Yamaha do it, Suzuki do it. I would love to have 1, 2, 3 on the podium.
But if somebody a team can lease the bike, if somebody can come along and become
absolutely
a bigger team in that essence, the name is already big.
Absolutely. So I think as soon as we get the bike to the point where it's competitive, another teams look at us and say, well, I'd now rather have a Norton than a Honda, or I'd now rather have the Norton than the BM. if we can get the bike into that position, why wouldn't we then put a few bikes and support a few other teams? It's good for racing, it's good for the brand.
Of course.
And you know, we do have an ambition to do that, but that's kind of talks cheap until your bike's good enough. So kind of the bike has to be good enough first, and if the bike's good enough, a one or a two bike team wouldn't then satisfy our thirst for racing. So we would want to go on and chat to a couple of professional well-run teams, yeah, to look to support a factory assisted team, and if that then led to, you know, fabulously like a first, second, third podium,
sure,
which is where we were 50 years ago.
Absolutely right, yeah.
You know, for me that would be fabulous, and it's a little bit of fun. It's super competitive to say we're going to take the game back to Honda, back to Yamaha, back to Kawasaki, Suzuki, and we want to fly the flag again for Britain. And if we can go and kind of get the thing on the top step and push on, that's what we'd like to do. If doing that in road racing, you know, happens, and that's where we get it, and the bike's got some legs in short circuit, we've got some decision making to do to see whether we would go back to short circuit or whether road racing would satisfy the thirst and that was good enough. And we absolutely haven't taken a view on that yet, but it, for us, racing needs to pay its way, and we wouldn't go TT racing or BSB or any other formula or championship if it doesn't pay, if it doesn't pay the bills. And that getting your income could be sponsorship, it can be merchandise sales, it could be dealer support, it can be rights holder support. There are many ways to get your racing income when you're the brand owner. It's different as a private race team. It's different because if you're racing a couple of Hondas, you can't go and sell any sponsorship or sell the Honda brand.
No.
But as Norton, we can use the brand to help our sponsor. And you can see the fabulous deal we've done this year with Bremont Watches,
yeah,
where we've done a limited edition Norton Bremont watch that'll be sold through Bremont's distribution and its watch shops around the world, and sold through our distribution around the world, and some of the sales go back into the race team. So by putting the two brands together, we've created a product that wouldn't have existed without the brands, and the sales from the product go to fund the race team. So it's not cost Bremont and it's not cost us. So we've actually come together to create a business, and the revenue from the business goes to the race team. So it's a pretty cool way to run your race team.
It's easy because the media these days is full of race teams. It's cost an arm and a leg to go racing. We can't do this. They're beholden to sponsors, they're beholden to race teams, wherever. But certainly it appears with the Norton brand, if you were to go forward and to have, in effect, a privateer team,
yeah,
either at the TT, short circuit, wherever the road leads, they do become a part of the Norton family and can then, yeah, promote the Norton brand within
absolutely
that team.
I think done very sharply, very commercially, racing to Norton can be a profit centre, and it never going to retire on it. and kind of we're not kidding ourselves that that's the heart of the business. But if we go racing and it's good for the brand, and don't forget our engineering has moved on huge leaps through what we've learnt at the TT. So similar to how Mercedes might go and learn in Formula One and then bring that technology to a car, we're learning at the TT and bringing that into a road bike, which you see in the V4. So there's some cost there that we can justifiably put against road development. I think if we come back, whether it's a $5,000 or $5,000, if we come back with a bit of money in our pocket, from my perspective, racing is a very worthwhile thing to do because it flies the flag for the brand.
Of course.
It continues race development, road bike development. And it's good, and it's a nice thing for the factory to do. All the boys in the factory are mad petrol heads.
Absolutely.
There's loads of motorbikes rock up kind of on a Monday morning, and it's good for the dealer network, the brand. So if we can go and race and it's not costing us a fortune, we will always go racing, and from there over the next year or two, we'll just continue to take stock of which championship is best for Norton. And I think the TT will always remain the heart of our racing ambition, and then it may or may not turn out that there's a bit of short circuit in years to come. We'll just have to see as we go.
Is it difficult with the TT being only 2 weeks a year? You have 50 other weeks then to build the bike, to develop the bike.
What do you think?
Of the 2 weeks, how tough is that to do?
So, how many rounds is BSB? 16, 18?
12 rounds, but two and three races, so 18 races.
Okay, so the BSB, you get 18 goes a year.
No, it's more than that, it's 26, 28.
Okay, so let's say you get 20 goes, so a year of BSB is 20 TT years.
Exactly, yeah.
So we're kind of, in essence, I'm four or five TT races in.
Yeah.
So that would put me four or five races into a BSB championship in BSB terms.
Yeah, not even mid-season.
So four or five races in, we're seventh.
Yeah.
So in we're happy with that progress. It's frustrating. It's a year to have a go, and you have to sit and wait, bite your nails, and do everything you can. But you know, as everybody knows, we can stick it around a short circuit as much as you like, but it doesn't get anywhere near to looking at the telemetry when we've barreled down Bray Hill at 180, and we've hit however many G's of compression. And you look at the laptop screen, and your little graph just disappears at the bottom of the screen. 2 seconds later, the graph goes off the top as you go over Argos, and the bloody thing's in the air. So you obviously cannot replicate that. So we only get one go a year to make it go fast around the TT. And I think the progress that we've made is great. And if we keep going the way we're going, in the next year or two, we'll have the bike in. We'll have the big stuff fully developed, and from there we're fine-tuning the setup. And when I say fully developed, the geometry,
yes,
and kind of chassis perfected, etc., etc.
Base to work from, then going
and
forward.
And then we're kind of chasing the gains on the margin, which the existing teams
aggregate
are chasing.
The marginal gains.
Exactly, and you know we're in touching distance of saying, well, that the hardware is done, is set, and we kind of smelt that in TT16, which is why we're happy now to take the road bike forwards.
Fantastic.
And getting the quality of riders that we've got starts to give us that professionalism. Those lads are used to chasing those small gains.
Yes, that's the difference now.
Yeah, and I think we see the project refining into a nice bike, and we've played catch up big time for two or three years, and we're kind of starting to get on terms with them now. So it's, you know, there's a nice goodwill and a without arrogance, there's a nice confidence coming to the team that we're starting to get the bike on terms with the rest of the paddock at the TT. We'll see.
Fantastic. Well, we'll look forward to seeing how you get on in the 2 weeks in June.
Yeah.
We'll have a chat after the TT, if that's okay.
Yeah, mega.
We'll give you a call, we'll catch up, see how it all went on. And very best of luck for the 2 weeks in June. Thank you.
Cheers, Dave. Thanks very much.
So that was Stuart Garner from Norton with the... A very interesting, I think you'll agree, insight into how the brand works. Had an awful lot of stick on social media as regards the Spondon frame and the Aprilia engine and the whys and wherefores. So hopefully that goes some way to dispelling some of the social media kick-ins that the brand and that Stuart himself has had. Quite an enjoyable chat that. We'll look forward to catching up with him after the TT, and we wish him all the best. Right, let's go for a wander and see who else we can find.
Big thank you, as always, to Dave for getting those interviews. Of course, we will have a fair few more interviews next week with Phil Hall, and then one or two more that Dave got that couldn't quite fit into this show. Of course, Phil Hall's coming from the PI Classic. That's how many interviews Phil Hall got, that we have gotten over three shows worth of interviews from Phil Hall. So a big thank you to both Phil and Dave for that one. And now we come to the World Superbike Championship. Now my transition finally does pay off. Of course, there was some testing before the World Superbike race happened in Phillip Island, but in all honesty, the first day of testing was rained off. I think we were actually hit by a cyclone. I haven't had official confirmation of that, but I did see someone say that a cyclone had passed over Phillip Island. So I guess I survived a cyclone, which is pretty cool in a way. And then the second day of testing, you know, lots of people did some people did some race runs like Lowe's, and otherwise it was mostly just people trying to make up for lost time and do the usual testing stuff. And then we went through Friday, two practice sessions, pretty sweet. No huge dramas there. Leon Camier, he unfortunately didn't get any running in either of the sessions. He did about, I think it was six laps across the 2 hours of track time on Friday. But Kamiya still managed to advance fastest through Superpole 1. So Kamiya and that MV working really well together when the MV does work. And then Michael Vandermark, he also advanced through Superpole 1. Eugene Laverty unfortunately crashed on, I think it was like the start of his second flying lap at Turn 2. He was unhurt. And, you know, despite only doing one flying lap, he still managed to set the third fastest time and miss out by just a tenth on going through to Superpole 2. Bit of a rough start to the year for Eugene Laverty. Obviously, Laverty was hoping to come back into the World Superbike Championship and challenge for race wins and, you know, maybe even the championship. I'm sure that Laverty will get there eventually. It's just that still some work to do, obviously, with both he and the Milwaukee team switching to the Aprilia. Laverty had raced the Aprilia before, but the current RSV4 is a bit different to the one that Laverty was on a couple of years ago. Randy Krumnacker was fourth on his World Superbike debut ahead of Stefan Bradl. Big, big, big problems for that Honda. Nicky Hayden advanced straight through to Superpole 2. Hayden can, it seems, produce a one-off flying lap on that new Honda CBR 1000RR SP2. But as we'll get to, things not so great for the Honda team. So yeah, so Bridal started the race 15th ahead of Josh Brooks on his home-built, basically R1. Then Ramos, Russo, Yekes, De Angelis, and Badovini rounding out the grid. Then we got to Superpole 2. And what a Superpole 2 session it was. Obviously in Superpole 2, they get the fancy Pirelli qualifying tyres, which last for just one lap. And we absolutely smashed the lap record with Jonathan Rea claiming pole position with a 129.573, which was over half a second faster than last year's lap record set by Tom Sykes. So Johnny Rea getting his title defense off into the perfect, perfect start with a pole position and a lap record. Johnny said ahead of the weekend that he wanted to get into the 129s around Phillip Island, and he did exactly what he wanted to.
Yeah, and getting into the 129s was no small feat, but it was done by several riders. And given that it was Tom Sykes in second and Marco Melandri third and Chaz Davies in fourth, we can kind of see who the big dogs were going to be this weekend, and all setting 129 laps.
And really, really impressive to see so many riders go that fast. And as you say, I think that does show how competitive the field is. You know, even Lowe's, who qualified in fifth for the first race, of course, this was the first weekend that we saw the race two grid reshuffle. Even Lowe's in fifth was under the old lap record. And Savadori, who was sixth, he was a thousandth of a second, I think it was, off the lap record from last year. So, you know, all of the front two rows were on lap record pace, which was absolutely incredible to see.
Yeah, and with lap record pace and all the way back to eighth or seventh position, and Jordi Torres were all within a second of Johnny Rea too. So that's, you know, we got what, four different manufacturers in there as well. So we got Aprilia, Ducati, Kawasaki, BMW,
five different manufacturers.
So five different manufacturers in the top seven, less than a second apart, with over half of those riders going under the lap record. Yeah, it's probably going to be pretty good this year, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And then we had Forres in eighth. He had an unfortunate crash. Otherwise, I think he would have also been up there around Savadori. Then just behind Forres was Leon Kamiya, ninth. Pretty good start for Kamiya. Vandermark, 10th. Nicky Hayden, 11th. And then Marcos Reiterberger there in 12th. So yeah, pretty good. And, you know, all 12 of those riders were within a second and a half of each other. The biggest gap was half a second, and that was between Savadori and Torres. But otherwise, you know, it was only, you know, 2/10. Most of the riders separated by just by less than a tenth from the rider ahead. So really, really, really great qualifying as always. You know, those Superpole tyres that Pirelli make it really exciting. You know, you obviously get the first run where it's just on race rubber and you see some pretty impressive times. But then when they start to grip it and rip it, that's when it becomes, really, really, really good to watch. And then, of course, with World Superbikes, not too long after qualifying, we did have the first race of the day, of the weekend, I should say. And what a great race it was. I mean, absolutely incredible racing down at Phillip Island. The track had gone up by 20 degrees. The track temperature, that is, had gone up by 20 degrees since qualifying, and riders were quite scared about tire life, which made a couple of guys like Johnny and Chaz especially roll off a bit. to try and conserve their tires, which probably helped close the field up. But for most of the race, we had, you know, six or seven riders all together, all swapping positions. Incredible to watch. We had Marco Melandri right up there on his racing return until he had a bit of an incident with Alex Lowes. Unsurprisingly, slightly different perspectives on what went on between Lowes and Melandri. But Melandri did unfortunately fail to finish that first race. But he was up there at the start, so Melandri hasn't lost too much of his speed after a year of not racing, which is pretty good to see.
No, he was. That was one thing everyone was wondering. It's like, okay, qualifying is one thing, testing is one thing. You're setting fast laps by your time, clear track, no one around you. Can you still get your racing head on? And he answered that right off the bat in the first race, because not only did he, he would have finished in the top five for sure had he still been in the race and didn't have a little excursion there with Lowe's, but. You know, he looked race ready and he was aggressive and he was putting it on tight lines, lifting people up. So, doesn't look like he missed a beat at all in the time that he took off.
Nah. So, yeah, it was the usual guys on the podium with Ray and Davies dragging it out to the line, just 0.04 of a second separating those two guys at the line. Chaz is not quite able to nip past the Kawasaki down the straight. And Sykes was a second back. Sykes in third. Sykes had to battle pretty hard with Alex Lowes. Alex Lowes producing one of the best rides I think I've seen him ride in World Superbikes. Really, really good for him. But maybe the biggest surprise and perhaps the best ride of the race overall came from Leon Camier in fifth place on the MV Augusta, 3 seconds off the win, but spent most of the race battling with those guys at the front. I don't think that the MV is going to be able to do that every race, but when a track suits the MV and suits Camier, then I think that they could do some really great things. And I'd be really interested to see what Camier could do on maybe the Kawasaki, because that's looks to be one of the bigger bikes. But Camier is pretty talented, and that MV isn't quite as bad as I think that a lot of people think it is.
No, and they can probably compete with Aprilia for maybe the smallest racing department with number of people. Yeah. They're definitely the smallest manufacturer out there right now. And the fact that they have one rider and what we'll talk about later in World Supersport too, for how good their bikes are, that's, they've got a pretty good engineering department to be able to pump out what they do for these race weekends.
Yep, exactly. So yeah, great from Camier. Again, great from Forez. He was much like Camier, really strong at the start of the race and faded towards the end. Forez doesn't exactly have the most refined race craft, shall we say, but Forez is super, super aggressive, which is always exciting in those opening laps. You always know that Forez is going to be up there on that Barney Ducati, mixing it, throwing in some hard moves. And again, it could be a bit of a wild card for the podium. Behind him was Jordi Torres on the BMW. Pretty solid result in seventh for Torres. Eugene Laverty made huge gains to get up to eighth place on the Milwaukee Aprilia, just ahead of Michael Vandermark, who was ninth. Randy Krumenacher got a top 10 on his debut. Didn't think that that would happen. Nicky Hayden, 11th. Hayden hugely disappointed with 11th place. That wouldn't be the lowest point of his weekend, unfortunately, for Nicky Hayden.
No.
Reiterberger in 12th, Ramos in 13th, De Angelis 14th, Stefan Bradl in 15th, which again, shows how much this Honda is struggling. Stefan Bradl, should be up inside that top 10, but neither he nor Hayden were able to crack that top 10. Hayden was losing a lot of time down the straight, he said, and Stefan Bradl was losing a lot of time through that fast turn 3, Stoner Corner. So yeah, not sure what that team has planned. Obviously, with Thailand being the next round and all the bikes getting shipped directly there, there's not too much development work that can go on. So I think that Thailand could be another tough round for Honda. Ricardo Russo, 16th, ahead of Badovini and Andre Jeckez there in 18th. Melandri, as we said, failed to finish. Josh Brooks was unfortunately forced to retire from race one with, I think it was a water pump issue. His engine just got too hot, so he decided to roll in. Then Lorenzo Savadori, he was rapidly closing down the top five. And as a young Italian rider, unfortunately, he did get a bit overly enthusiastic and unfortunately did crash. But Savadori, luckily, all okay and was able to get going again for the second race on Sunday.
And the second race on Sunday was after such a dust up in the first race. I think the track conditions were a little better. I think guys were going to try to go a little faster. But the big thing that was going to make a difference to the Sunday race is this is the first time we were actually going to watch the grid get flipped. And yeah. just a quick reminder, anybody out there, first goes to worst, as they would say, first to ninth, and then second would go to eighth, and then third to seventh, and then fourth goes to first, fifth, goes a second, so on and so forth, if everyone remembers. But anyway, it's you know, I would say that it did exactly what they wanted to do. It provided an extra bit of passing. What I had feared actually of happening did kind of happen, but it ended up, you know, being okay, was that Tom Sykes was the one rider who got held up that was in contention in the first race, and it looked like he was going to get taken out, and not taken out, but he was going to lose touch with the leaders and not be able to make it to the ground. But Tom Sykes actually had a really good weekend as far as a Tom Sykes at Phillip Island, because it is not a strong track for him. And he was definitely happy with the results that he got from both races, even though he finished just in sixth for this race. He still had a great race to come back as far as gap he has to close to the leaders.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, Phillip Island, as we keep saying, is a really, really unique circuit. And I don't think that you know, that those third row guys are going to have it as easy as they did in every race this year. You know, tighter circuits like Aragon, like Donington, and some tracks like that are going to be a bit harder for them to make their way through. But the cream does always rise to the top. And as you rightly said, Skylar, you know, the race two grid format gave us a nice fight with, you know, Eugene Laverty, Camier and Forres out the front for the first couple laps while those guys made their way through. And then, you know, we had a mid part of the race where, you know, those guys were again mixing up with the leaders. And it was just nice to see, you know, a bit more variety and a bit more action from the racing. You know, I know that the grid reshuffle isn't for everybody. You know, I'm sure that there's definitely a few riders who don't like it. You know, there's definitely fans who don't like it, who don't think it's sporting. But I think that it's something that it's, you know, it's at least interesting to try, and I think it's worth trying. And I'm sure that, you know, if it does present a serious safety hazard at some circuit, then, you know, the rule could be revoked, I guess. I'm not 100% sure on the procedure for that one. But yeah, for me, I think it did what was expected. And yeah, I'm pretty excited to see how it goes. It's a bit tricky at the end of race one to you know, to try and mentally figure out the grid. But other than that, I quite liked it.
Yeah, and so finishing in your race winner was Jonathan Rain, is followed in second place by Chaz Davies. Third place is Marco Melandri, and fourth place was Alex Lowes. And those were pretty much the guys that were battling out the entire race. They were going back and forth. I don't think anyone had the lead for more than two laps at a time, at best maybe three. And it was a draft fest. If you led that, you know, across the finish line, more than likely you weren't going to be leading into turn one on every single lap, except for the Kawasaki. The Kawasaki is pretty fast, but
yeah, no, the Kawasaki does look pretty good at top speed. But, you know, having said that, all three of those top three guys were, you know, 314, 315, 317 Ks an hour. So, you know, the Ducati and the Kawasaki are pretty evenly matched. Obviously at Phillip Island, as you said, the slipstream does help a fair bit. And then it probably also helps Marco Melandri that, you know, he's the size of a 10-year-old boy, whereas, you know, Chaz Davies is pretty big, and then Jonathan Ray is also pretty big. But yeah, you know, all those bikes are pretty evenly matched, and as we saw from the racing, you know, they're all strong in different areas. All those riders are strong in different areas, and it is really great racing. You know, if you combine the difference between first and second from both races, that gap is still less than a tenth of a second to decide two different races. So absolutely incredible start to the season. You know, from this, as I said before, it does look like it will be Johnny and Chaz throughout the whole year. But, you know, we have Melandri, he's an unknown. We have Lowes, we have Sykes. It's just really, really good foundation, I think. And I think that, you know, the racing in Thailand might not be as close, but I think we'll have another great race there. And I think that this could, yeah, I think that it's just going to be a great year for World Superbikes, in all honesty.
Yeah, and with Lowe's, you know, as Andy had emailed us and he was talking about his performance, and you had mentioned he had a great performance, you know, two fourth places. That's a great start for his season, and that team needed it. They struggled with that Yamaha last year, and it looks like they have definitely been able to figure things out. Now, like we keep bringing up, this is kind of a one-hit wonder track sometimes with motorcycles, and when they get to other tracks, it might not be as good, but they are definitely off to a better start than last year. And hopefully, you know, this gives them the confidence to keep pushing, and because, you know, having another manufacturer up there, because we don't want to get into the same territory where it was green or red, and that's pretty much who we had to be on to win a race. And hopefully we can get a bit of a spoilers this year. Finishing in fifth was Chavi Forrest. You know, he actually had a really good weekend. He was battling with the leaders for quite a while. He only kind of lost touch with them at the end, finishing about 2 seconds back. But he was up there for for quite some time until maybe his tires started to go off. But, I mean, you know, he brought it home right there in front of Sykes, and Sykes had to try to run him and his group down. But, you know, still fairly close. They were kind of the guys that got lost in no man's land there for a little while. But, you know, still great performance by Forez and Sykes, considering this is one of Sykes' toughest tracks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, last year Sykes got, I think, what was it, fifth and sixth at this track. So, you know, already by getting third in race one, that was a big improvement for Sykes. So he was pretty happy. He can head to Thailand pretty confident. Michael Vandermark managed to get up inside the top 10 with seventh place on that Yamaha. Vandermark, you know, you can see on the bike that Vandermark is still so much more aggressive on that bike than Lowe's is. You know, Vandermark is, he's just such an aggressive rider, and I don't think that really suits the R1. I think Vandermark does maybe need to try and get a bit smoother, a bit more like Alex Lowe's. But no, Vandermark, you know, again, has huge potential. I can't wait to see what Vandermark can do. Vandermark, I'm pretty sure, was on pole last year at Thailand. My stat book is across the room from me, and I honestly can't be bothered to step up. So please do motopod at motopodcast.com. Correct me if I am wrong about Michael Vandermark being on pole last year in Thailand. He was seventh. Leon Kamia, eighth. Another top 10 for Kamia. You know, the MV Augusta beating both of the Aprilias, which is, you know, huge. Obviously, you know, both those Aprilias started pretty close to him thanks to the reshuffle. So it's not like, you know, he had started on the front row and then, you know, already had a pretty big advantage. Savadori was 9th, Eugene Laverty 10th, De Angelis 11th, Josh Brooks 12th. Really impressive ride for Josh Brooks, as we said, on that homegrown Yamaha, more or less. Reiterberger in 13th, Ramos 14th, Stefan Bradl again 15th. 2 points for Stefan Bradl on his World Superbike debut, not what he would have wanted. Krumacher 16th, Yekes 17th. Then Jordi Torres, he didn't even finish the formation lap as he had a technical problem. Ricardo Russo crashed. Ayton Badovini crashed, and then Nicky Hayden also crashed. Really rare for Nicky Hayden to crash. You know, we know how a consistent rider he is, and I don't think I've ever seen Nicky Hayden as depressed, angry, lost as I did after race two. Nicky Hayden wasn't too hurt in his crash. He tweaked his knee a bit, but otherwise all okay. But yeah, Nicky Hayden just seems really unhappy and sort of hopeless with that new Honda. It's going to be a long year.
Yeah, when Bradl came back to the pits too, after that, he finished that race, they caught him walking down the pit lane into his box, and he kind of took his helmet off and flicked it into the cubby hole there and just sat down with the force, and the team didn't even bother asking him any questions because they knew that, you know, how big of a struggle they're having with that bike and how far off they are. And I think, like you said, they're getting that look of not only disappointment and frustration, but hopelessness. Like, this bike can't make the jumps that we needed to be able to compete. We're going out there and we're overriding it, and especially like in Hayden's case, and still coming up with 2 points for our entire, you know, race. That's not going to cut it, especially this year with so many big hitters on so many good bikes. You know, you've got a Honda to, you know, I don't know how many times, you know, we've had this conversation, or, you know, just the short time I've been here, but let alone, you know, the years before. I've talked, you know, plenty of people around here that bike is essentially the same concept and idea that came out in 2007 or something like that. And it's like, you know, in that time, we've had the R1 go through two different, you know, models. The Kawasaki might have even gone through three at this time. There's been two or three different Ducatis in Superbike, and the Honda essentially, well, you know, it's now the add an S&P and that makes it different. Not really, when it's still the same chassis and they take the intake valves and off of one bike and put it on another, and they call that an engine update. And it looks like it's just about that good too.
Well, yeah, and the biggest issue with the Honda this year is just that the Tenkata team got it so late. They got it, you know, like 2 weeks before the first test. So they've just not really had any time to develop anything. You know, there is a fair bit new on the bike. They're working with a new exhaust manufacturer, Akroprovic, as opposed to Termignoni. So, you know, that's just another thing that's just complicating it all. And there's just a lot of work to do on that bike. And, you know, again, the Tenkata team don't have that much help, if any help, from Honda. You know, there's no HRC stickers on that bike. And I'm sure that they will get there. It's just how long it takes them to get there. How long we can see two great riders, two great guys like Nicky Hayden, Stefan Bradl, sort of, you know, put in the hard miles during testing, during free practice, to then only have it not pay off on race day.
They should worry a little bit about it, though. As I tell you right now, I've got about 20 friends out here that ride and probably about 15 of them have bought super bikes in the last several years. You know how many Hondas have been purchased?
None.
It's a big goose egg. Zero. Bunch of R1s and Kawasaki's out here. So, yeah, that's, and they're already talking about how the 600 doesn't make any sales anymore. It's like, all right, guys, well, you know, if you don't sell any super bikes or any 600s, no one gives a rat's ass about the MotoGP project because they can't buy your motorcycles anywhere.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, but like you said, long season to go, and hopefully they can get that pointed in the right direction. Someone who does have a point in the right direction is the man who did the double this weekend and getting his 40th win, and to start off his championship right where he wanted to is Jonathan Rea, and he is now leading the championship with 50 points. Chaz Davies is in second, only 10 back, so he had a fantastic weekend as well. Tom Sykes is in third at he's 24 points back, tied with Alex Lowes, who is also 24 points back. Behind him is Chavi Forrest in fifth. Leon Camier in sixth. Marco Melandri on seventh. Michael Vandermark is in eighth. Eugene Laverty in ninth. Jordi Torres in 10th. Lorenzo Salvadori in 11th. Alex De Angelis in 12th. Marcus Ryderberger in 13th. Randy Krumenacker in 14th. Nikki Hayden in 15th. Roman Rano in 16th. Josh Brooks in 17th. And Stefan Bradl in 18th. So already Bradl 48 points back. That's probably another thing you can look at to where these guys are like, great, you know, we're starting this far back. Nikki Hayden 45 points back. So, you know, that's already a gap that you're gonna, you know, you've already seen your already blow up after the first race. Essentially, you know, that's gonna be a
It's going to be a long hard road for them. I certainly don't think that anybody should be worried that Chaz Davies is already 10 points behind Jonathan. Davies was pretty pleased with his results. You know, Davies, much like Sykes, said that, you know, this isn't one of our best circuits, so to walk away here with 2 second places is really good. You know, we know how strong Davies can be at some circuits, like Aragon. We know that, you know, Davies has the potential at the end of the year to dominate. He did win 7 out of the last 8 races last year. So I don't think that Jonathan Rea is going to have it as easy as he did last year. Not that the championship was won easily, but, you know, there were some mistakes from Chaz early in the season, a couple of DNFs, which really put him on the back foot. I think that Chaz has matured a little bit, has calmed down a little bit, has gotten a lot more confidence in himself, knowing that he and the Ducati can win races at circuits that maybe they couldn't before. And that, you know, as long as he does stay upright and, you know, pick up points, pick up podiums, that he can take the fight with Jonathan down to Qatar if needs be. So yeah, as I said before, you know, I think it's said to be an incredible season, especially when you're throwing guys like Marco Melandri in there. You know, this was Marco Melandri's first race back after a year and a half of not racing, and he was already up to the speed of the three fastest world superbike riders in the world. So, you know, Marco Melandri is seventh now, 34 points down. Can he win the championship? I don't know. That might be a bit of a big ask. Can Marco Melandri finish top three? Almost certainly. So I think that, you know, it's going to be great between Melandri, Sykes, Lowes, maybe Forres, Vandermark, Laverty, once he gets that Aprilia sorted, you know, from third down to fifth or sixth. It's going to be an absolutely thrilling fight throughout the year. And then I think that, yeah, it does seem like Rea and Davies do have just that bit of an edge for the overall championship. But as you know, as we say, it's still only the first race. There's 24 races left. So huge amount still to come.
No, it's going to be a great season because, like you said, you know, Melandri led, you know, a handful of laps as well. He wasn't just clinking on their coattails. He was, you know, duking it out. And Johnny Rea and Chaz Davies, you know, they had to push hard at the end of the races. And that's where they kind of, I think, have the advantage right now, is that they're really good on worn tires at the end of the race. And that's where they kind of get that final little bit of push. So this season's got potential to certainly line up to be good. So moving on to World Supersport. World Supersport qualifying.
Speaking of being good, World Supersport was absolutely excellent. PJ Jacobson rocked qualifying. He'd been so strong all weekend. Seemed to be able to produce the lap times whenever he wanted. He finished a tenth ahead of Cluzel grabbing onto the back of Jacobson for a pretty big toe and admitting it. Then Federico Caracasulo, a young Italian on that new Yamaha R6, he was third ahead of Kyle Ride. Ride had looked pretty not great, in all honesty, during testing, pretty far off the times. But then come race weekend, he really stepped it up. And to qualify fourth for his, you know, his first weekend on that ZX-10R with the Pichetti team, huge thing for him. So, you know, really, really strong. Obviously, the leading Kawasaki there with Sefoglu not there. Lucas Myas, the somewhat crazy Frenchman. It is actually pronounced Myas, I found out this weekend, not Mahias. So I felt like a bit of an ass for saying my ass for for most of the broadcast, but that is how you say his name. He was fifth, ahead of Baldellini, Gino Rea, Robbie Rolfo in eighth there. Remember that name. Kyle Smith, Hiroki Okubo, he qualified 10th but crashed on one of his second flying laps and broke his collarbone, so he was unfortunately able to participate in the race. He's hoping to be back for Thailand, but not 100% sure. Luke Stapleford on the Triumph, he was 11th ahead of Michael Canducci, teammate to Kyle Ride and Keenan Sefoglu. So that was Superpole. Superpole was pretty good. No huge surprises. Unfortunately, Ant West, he didn't qualify inside the top 10. He was actually down in, I think it was 21st or 22nd place. But in true Ant West style, that didn't really matter. The drama started almost immediately in the World Supersport race, as we did have a red flag just, I think it was on the second lap of the race, as Robin Muehlhauser had an absolutely massive crash on the exit of Siberia, huge high side, his bike flipping end over end, his bike hitting Gino Rea. Gino Rea pretty lucky to not get seriously injured in that one. Unfortunately, Gino was forced out of the race. Muehlhauser's bike flipped over, left oil on the track, brought out the red flag, which was pretty good for PJ Jacobsen, because at this point, PJ Jacobsen had a technical problem and was actually way outside the points in something like 24th on the track. And because they hadn't completed more than three laps, it went back to the original grid, so PJ was back on pole, which was a pretty big blessing in disguise for PJ Jacobsen and for a couple of other riders as well. But you know, the marshals did a great job to get that racetrack clean, and then we had a restarted race, just 10 laps, so a nice, fast, close race. And and then from there, the World Supersport race just becomes a bit of a blur until the final lap. You know, again, much like the Superbike race, we had a really nice tight group of riders battling. We saw Ant West make an incredible start up inside the top 10 within just a couple of corners. As we said, it came down to an incredible last lap. Federico Caracasulo. Now, Federico Caracasulo, young Italian, on a factory bike, that factory new R6, saw him in the paddock on Sunday morning. Now, this kid had the look in his eyes that I'm going to win this race or I'm taking everybody out with me. So, you know, I went into the comms booth and think, yeah, Federico Caracasulo, he's definitely one to watch. Unfortunately, Jules Cluzel was not watching out for Federico Caracasulo, as Caracasulo came hurtling down Lukey Heights into MG, left his braking far too late, and speared into the back of Jules Cluzel on the last lap. Cluzel must have gone 10 feet in the air as he got thrown off his bike. Caracasulo was unable to finish. Jules Cluzel, he was taken out of an almost guaranteed podium. So huge disappointment for him, huge drama. There was other drama. PJ Jacobsen again ran off track early in the race and was forced to fight his way back up. He'd eventually crossed the line in sixth place. But joining Cluzel and Caracasulo and failing to finish were Stefan Hill, Davide Pizzoli, Luke Stapleford, and Kyle Smith. So we only had 14 finishers, but what a finish it was. Robbie Rolfo, who's been racing in Grand Prix since 1996, the same year that Valentino Rossi started racing, if I'm correct, and I think I am, Robbie Rolfo managed to take the victory by 1/1000th of a second at the line from Lucas Myas in an absolutely stunning end to the World Supersport race. Rolfo and Myas elbow to elbow across the line. Rolfo unfortunately being forced off track after the line. Mahias eventually getting a 1 second penalty for that move, but that didn't change the end result. But what a great race. Hugely unpredictable racing. We had Baldellini leading the race at one point. He was another one who crashed before the red flag, so, you know, hurried to get on his bike. And yeah, World Supersport was just absolutely incredible. Keenan Sefoglu sat in his hospital bed in Turkey. You know, obviously he didn't want Cluzel or PJ to have a bad weekend. None of us do. But Sefoglu must be relieved, I guess is probably the right word, about this weekend, because I'm not sure that Rolfo will be a title contender. Myas in second, he could very well be a title contender. But, you know, with PJ in sixth and then Cluzel failing to finish, it's pretty good weekend for Keenan Sefoglu.
Yeah, and, you know, a couple of things to drop in there. For Myas, actually had... when they crossed the line, he was actually shown as the winner, and they had to go back to a final finish, and the photo was about a tire width between the two bikes, and it was when they re-awarded to Rolfo, and Myas, for his leaning on Rofar, running him off the track. They actually handed him a 1 second penalty after the race, but since he finished 1.5 seconds ahead of West, it wasn't going to take him out of the standings in second position.
Yep, so Anthony West, third place. Anthony West came from 21st to third, which is impressive enough. But Anthony West, he'd blown up his two race engines before the race. It looked like he wouldn't be able to race until an Australian racer called Liam Colby came by and said to Westy, "Oh, I have a spare R6 engine up in Melbourne if you want." So one of Westy's mechanics drove to Melbourne, drove back, which is like a 5-hour round trip at least. Westy didn't know, you know, how many Ks this engine had on it, didn't know about the engine. He was 10 horsepower down on everybody else and still managed to charge through the field to take third place. I mean, fair play to Anthony West for that one.
That was an amazing effort. And, you know, I know the guys that over there running Keen's team, they had talked about that they couldn't find a rider fast enough to sub in for Keenan for the weekend, and somebody needs to give them Ant West's number, especially if he can't race in Thailand. Just go ahead and call him up, because obviously he's not on the strongest team. He probably can afford to walk over there and swap onto that Kawasaki for a race or two, and I'm pretty sure he would definitely be able to give them some TV time, because he'd be running with the top five undoubtedly. That guy's his talent is always amazing. I know it's a home track, but like you said, look at all the variables. He's on a motor he doesn't know, on a bike he probably hasn't ridden, you know, a whole lot because it's the beginning of the season. And, you know, on a horsepower, 10 horsepower down at Phillip Island is not something you just overcome by sitting in the draft. It's a huge disadvantage. So that was an excellent ride by Ant West, and hopefully, maybe that gets him a few sponsorship bucks and helps him get a little further along with his season. Behind Ant West was Kyle Wright, who had a great weekend, finishing fourth. As like you said, he was nowhere to be seen in testing, and he has just kind of pulled the rabbit out of the hat and has shown that not only is he going to be quick, but he's going to be competitive, and he is someone to keep an eye on as a young racer coming up. And he's also he's managed by, or I don't know if managed, but at least coached by Jonathan Ray, isn't he not?
Jonathan sort of, you know, helps out Kyle. Yeah, I guess a bit of a managerial role. Definitely helped him get that Pichetti ride. So, yeah, you know, pretty good guy to have in your corner as well.
Right. And finished behind me, here's the name I was looking for all weekend, and because he qualified poorly, if I'm not mistaken, it was Nicky Tooley. He qualified, I think, in 21st or 22nd. He's back there just like West. So here's another guy that rode to the front and had a fantastic weekend. And I, you know, hopefully, because I think Tooley's doing the whole season this year. So he was a guy, if everybody remembers, was harassing Kenyon Safoglu at the end of the season last year with about three rounds to go. And he came out of nowhere from the finish series. And so obviously the guy's got talent, rode from the back to the front, and keep an eye on Tooley, because I'm pretty sure we're going to see a lot more of him coming up this season.
Yeah, for sure. Tooley's going to be one to watch. He and teammate Sheridan Marais are still on the old R6, simply because there just aren't enough of the new R6s out there. So it's only the GRT team of Mayas and Cara Casulo who have that new bike. But from Aragon onwards, every team should have that new R6, more or less. PJ Jacobson, as we said, was in sixth after running off track. Aidan Wagner, the Australian, was seventh ahead of Watanabe. Nacho Calero, who was ninth, and so Nacho Calero, who's been racing in Supersport for I think it's 5 or 6 years, he'd scored 7 points throughout those entire 5 and 6 years, and so he scored 7 points in this one race, so Nacho Calero is already off to his best ever season. Lachlan Eppis, the Australian, he got in the top 10, great result for him, a young kid, you know, looking to try and make it. Sheridan Marais, the experienced South African teammate to Tooley, was 11th ahead of Zulfami Karadin. Baldellini, who had led the race at various points, he finished in 13th ahead of Michael Canducci. As we said, only 14 finishes. So pretty tough race for the Supersport guys.
Yeah, and, you know, a bit of attrition came at the end, but, you know, hard race, you know, 10-lap sprint, you know, it may get a little more dragged out with, you know, races going full distance, but I got to say, to start the season, this was, I thought I was going to get a break with World Supersport, because the way Jacobson was riding in practice, it looked like he might even be able to do what is almost impossible, and that's pull a gap at Phillip Island. But it was not, and it was, if not as competitive as the World Superbike, if not better race than all of them, which was hard to say, because it was hard pressed. And, you know, for your first, you had to call those races your first week, and I'm pretty sure that had to pretty much wreck your voice by the time you were done calling all these.
Yeah, it was pretty sore, but you know, the close races are easy to commentate, right? Because you know, there's always something to talk about going on track. It's the spread out races that become a little trickier. But no, it was an absolute pleasure to announce all of these races. You know, Jonathan Raid doing the double, that was great to see. Also great to see Robbie Rolfo to go out and win there. You know, Rolfo's been there, done it all. He's raced in MotoGP, 250s, 125s, World Superbike, World Supersport. He's so experienced and, you know, still able to be pretty quick. Sure, he got helped out a bit by, you know, some of the top guys not being there, but, you know, he started to get on, ride the thing and beat all those other guys. And, you know, great to see Envy Augusta up there with competitive motorcycles. You know, it's not just Jacobson. Obviously, Jacobson had his issues, but it's also Rolfo who's competitive on that F3, and also Baldellini's competitive on the F3. And both Baldellini and Rolfo are in privateer teams, whereas Jacobson's in the factory team. So, you know, keep an eye out for both Baldellini and Rolfo going throughout the season. I'm not sure that either of them will be able to put together a full championship campaign, but I think they'll be there to pick up, you know, the odd podium, maybe even another race win or two. Throughout the season. So yeah, congratulations to Robbie Rolfo, especially because, you know, he's the oldest guy on that super sport grid. You know, he's you know, in his mid to late 30s, up against, you know, all these angry teenagers, and, you know, still able to keep his cool and go out there and win.
Since World Supersport only has one race,
math not too hard weekend. On this one.
Yeah, the math isn't too hard. It's if you want to know how the championship is standing, well, I won't bore you by buzzing through them again, but who finished first through 14th, they are first through 14th in the championship. So it's not too hard. So Robbie Rolfo was leading that and going all the way down. So that was your World Superstar coverage for the weekend. And that about brings us probably towards the end of the show, Harry.
Yes, it certainly does, of course. Thank you once again to Phil Hall and Dave Neal for your guys's interviews. I think we've put together a pretty solid show. Once again, you know, a bit of a sorry for not being able to continue sort of our tradition of a weekly show, but you know, unfortunately, real life did get in the way. We will do our best to bring you a show next week as well, and then obviously it's off to Thailand for the second round of the World Superbike Championship. So, you know, we're now well and truly in the racing season. I think as we're recording this, it's something like 23 days or something till Qatar. So, you know, MotoGP is right around the corner, and it's looking great, really. You know, I'm so excited that World Superbikes is back. That's great racing. If you aren't a fan of World Superbikes, or, you know, only listen to this podcast for MotoGP news, I'd really recommend you at least go watch these three World Superbike races, obviously one being World Supersport, you know, just to whet your appetite for the racing season, because all three of those races were, you know, really, really top class races and sort of show you, you know, what motorcycle racing is all about. It's close, it's hard. There weren't too many hard feelings between guys like Rolfo and Mayas, or, you know, Chaz and Johnny after their hard races. It's just a really, really great weekend, and I hope that, you know, MotoGP and BSB and the TT and all of that can produce racing that's just as close and just as exciting as this.
Best season ever.
That's definitely what we're hoping. It's definitely off to a pretty strong start. And, you know, as we said, with MotoGP testing playing out as it has, it looks like that's going to be super interesting as well. So I can't wait for the lights to go out again.
Neither can I. You know, I have to say congratulations to us for actually getting a podcast done on time this week. Not only did we come back, but we came back and recorded early in the week, so it actually comes out on the Wednesday that we say it comes out. So that's going to be good. I was definitely glad to hop in before I leave for my little sabbatical. I'm going to be on vacation out touring the world a little bit in Vietnam and Cambodia, so I couldn't quite talk the fiance into taking our last week and hopping over to Thailand for the race. She wasn't too keen on me being able to do that, but unfortunately,
worth a shot,
but I'll have to be back on the plane, unfortunately, on the way back for that one. But you know, close enough, I guess.
Exactly.
But anyways, Harry, well, hey, thank you for giving us your time, Harry. I know you've got a super busy schedule now that you're a megastar and everything.
No,
and
I'm
little guys over here.
I am far from being a megastar. Don't you worry. You know, I do actually have to say a big thank you to all the Motopod listeners and to anybody else. You know, maybe you're coming to Motopod because you listened to me commentate World Superbikes, which would be, you know, pretty cool as well. But no, a huge thank you to everybody who did write in a comment. You know, I definitely did read them all. I think I replied, or at least, you know, gave it a little thumbs up or a little heart or whatever it is on whatever social media. But a huge thank you to everybody who did write in. You know, if you do have any constructive criticism about the commentary, then, you know, harry@motopodcast.com is my sort of personal Motopod email address. If you're just going to write in and call me a dickhead, then don't worry about writing that in. I already know I'm an absolute dickhead, so we'll save everybody some time. But yeah, you know, more than happy to hear anybody's feedback. And, you know, once again, thank you to everybody who did, you know, send a tweet right on Facebook or anything like that. Of course, you know, you can watch World Superbikes on the worldsuperbike.com website, or you can, you know, watch on Eurosport, certainly. You know, Eurosport has Gregory Haynes, you know, formerly of Dorna, alongside James Witham this year. You know, those two guys are also great commentators. You know, by all means, if you have Eurosport, you know, keep watching Eurosport. Don't buy a video pass just for me. And for anybody wanting to watch me commentate World Superbikes, which is a weird thing to say, I believe I'm also on beIN Sport in the US and Fox Sport in Australia. And other than that, I don't know, it could be somewhere else. Do tell me if you've ever seen me on TV, because yeah, I don't know, I just rock up, talk about motorbikes, and then hope it all goes cool. But yeah, can't say thank you enough to everybody at Motopod for everything. It's been a pretty wild ride, I must say. And yeah, and hopefully it's going to be an even wilder ride this year on track for everybody, and hopefully we're going to have some great racing to talk about throughout the course of the year.
It's already off to a great start. So, all right, well, that's it for me, everybody. I will see you next week, and that's a bye from me.
And bye from me. Catch you all next week.
Zoom.